that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want, power, great style. But I work in his factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse my poverty, and I...
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The latest CNN USA Today Gallup survey of American voters finds Massachusetts Senator John Kerry leading George W. Bush among registered voters 50% to 45%, and among likely voters by 52% to 44%. A comparison of support for the two candidates by the results of the 2000 election show that among likely voters, Bush is barely ahead in the red states he won 4 years ago, leading Kerry by just 50 to 47%. In the blue states, which Al Gore won, Kerry leads Bush by a substantial margin, 55 to 42%. And in the purple states, where the margin of victory for either candidate in 2000 was 5 percentage points or less, Kerry also leads by a substantial range, 55 to 39%. Kerry's strength in recent polls has forced the Bush campaign to go negative a lot sooner in the campaign than they had expected. George W. Bush has taken to accusing John Kerry of flip-flopping on the campaign trail this week as his campaign moves quickly into negative territory. But a list making the rounds on the internet shows that Bush has done his share of about-faces as well. A list first posted on the Daily Kos website points out that Bush has changed his mind on everything from the Department of Homeland Security and gay marriage to military benefits and the explanation for his mission accomplished banner. The list has broken through to the American media, illustrating how websites and blogs are changing the nature of political campaigns this year. Former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Hans Blix on Tuesday likened the run-up to the war on Iraq to a witch hunt and argued that the subsequent failure to find weapons of mass destruction would dent the public's faith in U.S. and British governments. Blix said that the intelligence information from the U.S. and other countries was exaggerated and that politicians should have asked more critical questions. Blix said that George W. Bush and Tony Blair were mistaken in their views, but he didn't think they acted in bad faith. More after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A Georgia woman was caught trying to use a fake $1 million bill to buy $1,600 worth of merchandise at a Walmart and was later found with two more of the bills in her purse, police said. A clerk at the store immediately noticed the bill was fake when the woman handed it to her on Friday. The woman tried to use two gift cards with only $2.32 of value on them to buy the merchandise, but when that didn't work, she asked the clerk if she could cash the $1 million bill. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Am I the only one who sometimes comes across a gut-wrenching, jaw-dropping story in the daily paper and then wonders, why did they bury this? Why isn't this the lead story on the front page? I had this reaction when I read a story with the deceptively bland headline of Modified Seeds Found Amid Unmodified Crops. Most people scanning the New York Times last month would either have missed this story entirely, since it was stuck down on the bottom of page 6 in section C, or simply would not have bothered to read beyond the boring headline. A better headline would have been Bioengineered Frankenfood Seeds Contaminating U.S. Food Supply. For that's what the story was about. It reported on new findings by the Union of Concerned Scientists, a respected group that recently ran systematic tests on the extent to which corporate-produced genetically tampered seeds have gotten out of control and spread their altered DNA into previously uncontaminated seeds. The genetically modified organisms engineered in the labs of such giants as Monsanto range from potatoes that have pesticides built into them to vegetables that contain particular drugs. This test was of corn, canola, and soybean seeds that were not the bioengineered variety and supposedly would be pure, free of genetic alteration. The scientists found, however, that more than two-thirds of the 36 batches they tested contained traces of DNA from genetically engineered varieties, meaning that despite assurances from the companies and our lame government regulators, the engineered demon is loose. As one of the scientists put it, the door to seed contamination is wide open. Even more alarming is the blasé attitude of the contaminators. Rather than trying to protect the purity of our food supply, industry flacks say that the world should simply agree to, quote, acceptable levels of contamination. This is Jim Hightower saying, if that's unacceptable, call the scientists to get the story the media is burying. 617-547-5552.
I wonder who that is. What can I do you for?
A yodeler. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a sturdy, firm floor with Plytanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Floors made with Plytanium plywood are stiffer and more versatile than floors made with other subflooring materials. Plytanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Friends, greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. Tom Hartman here with you. We have some remarkable economic news today, and a voice from the past. I want to go back. You know, the conservative agenda is, I'm just fascinated by this. In fact, we're going to have on, in our second hour, we're going to have on a fellow from the Heritage Foundation who's going to tell us why everything should be privatized. And corporations should run America, basically. And in our third hour today, we're going to have on a fellow who's going to talk about the privatization of the U.S. military and its consequences for us. The author of How Much Money Did We Make at War Today, Daddy, as I recall. How much money are you making on the war, Daddy? William Hartung in our third hour today. But first, an interesting article on the front page of the Wall Street Journal yesterday got me going on this. And it's just, you know, what is going on here? I mean, what is the conservative agenda really all about? What are they up to? What's the deal? I mean, you know, and the economic side of it is really the side of it. I mean, you can boil the entire conservative agenda down to two words: cheap labor. It really does boil down that simply. And I mean, even the so-called social side of it ultimately will boil down to cheap labor. And this is a cycle that we have gone through before in the United States. We saw during the 1880s, 1890s, 1910 era, once before, the rise of radical conservatives and the slashing, the cutting away, the destruction of an American middle class. And out of this came the progressive and populist movement. It's like deja vu all over again.
And it just frankly, it amazes me that John Kerry hasn't embraced the line. You know, why doesn't he say, yes, I am a liberal. It is liberals who brought you Social Security, Medicaid, the Environmental Protection Agency. Yes, I know Nixon signed the law, but it was the Democratic Congress that passed it. The USDA, going back to 1913 when the USDA was put into play, and on and on and on, you know, the protections for our air and our water. What's wrong with saying that? I don't get it. You know, Teddy Roosevelt, well known for saying, hey, you know, here's, you know, he's a rather outspoken guy. Had some interesting observation. I just want to share a little bit of this with you, and then I want to get to this story in the front page of the Wall Street Journal about what's happening with our economy. What can you expect with your job and your money, and what is the is America going broke? I mean, are these guys setting us up intentionally for bankruptcy so that they can destroy what they consider to be socialism, right? A welfare state, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yes, 40-some-odd billion dollars in welfare to humans, $150 billion in welfare to corporations. Oh, we don't want to touch that. That's good welfare. But, you know, there's a very careful parsing of language here. Anyhow, Teddy Roosevelt, back in 1912, talking about conservatives and his notion of the future of America.
I prefer to work with moderate, with rational conservatives, provided only that they do in good faith strive forward toward the light. But when they halt and turn their backs to the light, sit with the scorners on the seats of reaction, then I must part company with them.
Yeah, see, that this is when he... this is the Republican president of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt. We're not talking about his distant second cousin, Franklin Roosevelt. He said, I part company with these guys. I part company with them when they become extremists. And then he talks about what happened in France, and he goes through the whole situation where the French, you know, the French Revolution was the result of the Bourbons rising up, you know, the conservatives. He calls them that, the radical conservatives in France. And he says we've got to be careful that doesn't happen. Something like that doesn't happen in the United States. These kinds of polarities.
May our ultra-conservatives remember that the rule of the Bourbons brought on the revolution.
Yes, and
friends, our task as Americans is to strive for social and industrial justice achieved through the genuine rule of the people.
We have to strive for social and industrial justice. I hope you can hear that. This is a pretty bad quality clips, but they're, you know, it's from 1912. And here's one last little bit. And this will do it for Teddy.
In our hearts, we must have this lofty purpose to strive for it in all earnestness and sincerity, for our work will come to nothing. In order to succeed.
And in order to succeed, he says, and here's his message down through the ages to John Kerry. We need leaders of inspired idealism.
Leaders to whom are granted great visions.
Leaders to whom are granted great visions.
Who dream greatly and strive to make their dreams come true.
Who dream greatly and strive to make their dreams come true.
Who can kindle the people with the fire from their own burning souls.
Who can kindle the people from the fire of their own burning souls. Yes. Well said, Teddy. Thank you for that. So here at the Wall Street Journal, the bull market, you know, the stock market, this economic recovery for the rich that all the Republicans like to talk about, or all the conservatives, let's say. There's a lot of Democrats who are talking about it, too. The headline from yesterday, front page, yesterday's Wall Street Journal, with the bull market stalled, pros hunt, professional stock folks, hunt for signs of a peak. And then the subhead, while most don't think the run is over, many feel the big gains may be behind. With stocks here, and this from the article, this by E.S. Browning, with stocks in the midst of a bullish run, a number of seasoned investors have started to study their favorite tea leaves, searching for hints of a possible retreat. He goes on to say, with most major indicators still well short of their records, they seem to be hitting headwinds. The NASDAQ composite has fallen for six of the past 7 weeks. The Dow Industrials finished yesterday down 1.9% from their recent high and short of the record high, goes on. Is this the beginning of the end or just a bump in the road? Rhetorically asks E.S. Browning on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. The tea leaf readers' general consensus? The market hasn't gone as high as it can go, but the majority of the gains are behind us. He goes on to say, many say that the bull market has at least a few more months to run. Some say a year or more. And then it goes in the tank. Now, why would that be, and why would it go in the tank? It's, by the way, I want to just mention one thing. Yesterday, we in our call screening efforts yesterday, catching telephone calls, we had three calls that had apparently come in while I was on the air that ended up rolling over into our voicemail system. I apologize to those callers. We apparently weren't paying attention to the lights. Bells don't ring here. Lights go off, and you got to watch them. And three angry callers left messages on the machine going, why aren't you taking a mic? And I'm sorry. We're going to do a better job. I just wanted to say that and apologize. Anyhow, a new study by the consulting firm Getzler Heinrich & Associates. And our number, if you'd like to call, 1-866-889-8894. A new study by the consulting firm Getzler Heinrich & Associates looked at the potential impact of higher rates on publicly traded companies. This higher interest rates. See, interest rates are at historic lows right now, and there's, and you say, oh no, this is boring stuff. Interest, no, this is what is going to absolutely, this is the vice that is going to, the, you know, into which our head has been placed collectively. This is the rock that's coming, you know, the Wile E. Coyote. You know, here we are, Wile E. Coyote, walking down the road, and the roadrunner has tossed a boulder off the top of the cliff, and we're looking up. And what is it that's coming down? It's going to be interest rates. This is an article by Rachel Beck, a column she writes called All Business, and it was in the Burlington Free Press. I'm assuming it's syndicated. Oh, yeah, it's syndicated by the Associated Press, in fact. She says, a new study by the consulting firm Getzler Heinrich & Associates looked at the potential impact of higher rates on publicly traded companies. So if interest rates go up, and see, Greenspan has got them as low as they can go right now. In fact, he's recommending that people stop taking fixed-rate mortgages, which are around 5.5%, and go to adjustable-rate mortgages, which are around 3.5%, so that they can continue to borrow against the value of their homes, so that they can continue to spend and go deeper and deeper in debt, so that the economy will continue to look like it's viable. And apparently companies are doing the same thing. Of the 2,000 companies included in the study, 308 use at least half of their operating earnings to pay interest expenses. You get that? This is interest expense. This is like, you know, if you are living your life on credit cards and half of your income is going not to pay off the credit card, just to pay the interest. Then you have the situation that 308 out of 2,000 American companies in this study, so you know you could reasonably assume about 15% of American companies are facing. She goes on to say, that is, they spend 50 cents of interest for every $1 earned. Should interest rates rise just 1 percentage point? Just 1 percentage point. I mean, keep in mind the Fed is keeping the. The Fed fund rate's down at about 1% right now, I think it is. Should interest rates rise just 1 percentage point, about 45 of those 308 companies would need to spend at least 2/3 of their operating income on interest payments. And that could these are publicly held companies, by the way. These are the companies that are on the stock market, the ones whose stock are traded. There was an article also yesterday in the Wall Street Journal, headline, Halliburton Concern About Liquidity. You know, another one of in the bunch here, apparently. If interest rates go up just 1 percentage point, another 45 of those 308 companies would need to spend at least 2/3 of their operating income on interest payments, and they could, and that could potentially cause them to default on their loan covenants. If rates rose 2 percentage points, the numbers in that squeeze would jump to about 80. These are corporations in the financial services area, manufacturing, transportation, and energy. Now, are interest rates coming down the road? Is the United States of America about to go bankrupt? Well, first of all, Alan Greenspan is on record as saying these rates, these low rates that we have right now, are not going to last. And it's really quite remarkable when you just simply do the math on the situation with the United States. Before I get to that, I want to just lay it out for you after the break. All of a sudden, the U.S. Producer Price Index is no longer available. The number that shows oncoming inflation, the PPI, suddenly the Bureau that puts this thing out, the Bureau of Commerce, can't come up with the numbers anymore for January or for February. They're just not available. Maybe after the election. Stick around. This is Tom Hartman, 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
Humans are reshaping planet Earth through an interlocking web of environmental impacts. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Rising temperatures and melting glaciers are signs of climate change, but Will Steppen, co-author of Global Change in the Earth System, says that's just one of many global impacts humans are causing.
That's the changing chemistry in the atmosphere, changing chemistry in the ocean, land cover change, changing biological complexity, and by that I mean not only biodiversity, but also invasive species and the homogenization of the biosphere by moving common plants and animals around.
Steppen's book focuses on how all these global changes affect each other.
10-15 years ago, we tended to look at climate as a problem. We tended to look at biodiversity as a problem. We tended to look at air pollution as a problem and the ozone hole and so on. But as we study them, we're beginning to understand that the causes and consequences of these are very complex, and they actually intersect with each other, and that's the critical thing.
Steppen says the relationship between biodiversity and climate is one example of these types of complex interactions.
Obviously, there's a big intersection between climate and biodiversity. If climate starts changing too rapidly, it's going to have a big impact on biodiversity. We also know that land use change also affects climate.
Steppen says his book tries to put the different pieces of global change together to understand the Earth's environment as a whole. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by...
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left at the United Nations, free. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad.
We'll be right back.
best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Here's the numbers. Very straightforward, very simple. Don Smith wrote a great op-ed piece about this for GoldEagle.com, Gold-Eagle.com. He says, let's look at some rounded numbers. The U.S. national debt, $7 trillion. The U.S. income, not including funds that go specifically to Social Security and Medicare, which is a separate fund. The U.S. income, $1 trillion. So we owe $7 trillion. Reagan ran up about $3 trillion of that. Bush has run up about $3 trillion of that. All the other presidents combined ran up about $1 trillion of that. So we owe $7 trillion. Our income annually is $1 trillion. Our deficit this year is a half trillion. The interest rate on the debt is about 5% right now. We spent $128 billion in the first trimester of fiscal 2004, that's, you know, we're spending about, what is that, about $450 billion on debt service here. Anyway, he does his math and he says, what if the interest rates go up just a quarter of a percent a year? Which is very conservative. I mean, if you go back and you look at very cautious, if you go back and you look at the numbers from the 1970s, 1980s, I mean, we had interest rates as high as mortgage rates, general borrowing rates. I mean, you know, right now we're around 5%. We had them as high as 17 to 22%. But if it just went up a quarter of a percent a year, so that by 2014 we were having to pay 7.5%. That's how much we would have to pay people in order to get them to take our debt. If we continue to do that, with the budget held at $1.5 trillion and the revenues held at $1 trillion, which is what George Bush's budget calls for right now, that increasing debt expense would reach the point where by the year 2014, the amount of money... Well, here, I'll read you. He says, assume for a moment that the statistics above are reasonably accurate and hold constant for a few years. Also, says, bloody, bloody, as the graph below shows, by the year 2011, 100% of the revenue the government receives will go straight from the taxpayer's pocketbook to the holders of U.S. debt instruments. There will be no money for any governmental function in the United States of America whatsoever. Now, this is why Alan Greenspan comes along and says, we got to look at another revenue stream, and that is the tax that is only paid on the first $89,000 worth of income. The tax that's only paid by the middle class and the working class. The Social Security tax, the payroll tax. And even though the Social Security Fund is fully solvent through the year 2041 right now, and simply by raising that cap up to, say, $100,000 a year that you would have to pay, in the first $100,000 a year of your income, you would have to pay into the Social Security Fund, the payroll tax, that would make it solvent forever. Nonetheless, Greenspan comes out and says, well, you know, we need to cut Social Security benefit. Why? Because they want to take that money. They're going to have to take that money to deal with this debt. And why is that? Because philosophically, the conservative worldview says the government should not be in the business of helping people with their retirement. The government should not be in the business of protecting people who fall through the cracks. We should be just leaving that up to the churches and to the charity of families. That's the conservative worldview. And we've been there. It's the world that Charles Dickens chronicles. It's the world that the United States had during the Gilded Age. It was a very difficult world for working people and a very marvelous world for the very wealthy. Is that the kind of America that we want? I think we really ought to have a legitimate debate about this. You know, what kind of... Do we want to have a middle class in America? Or do we want to go back to just a terrified working class who will work for anything, for Walmart wages, and a ruling few? This is Tom Harbin, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
After the towers fell, our streets, homes, and offices were coated with dust containing asbestos and other cancer-causing chemicals. But instead of heeding the health warnings of their own experts, the Bush White House told us it was safe to go back into Lower Manhattan when it wasn't. There is a better way to protect us, Mr. President. Take action now that keeps more harm from happening. Clean up the world trade dust that's still in our homes and workplaces. And be honest with us. Don't hold back health warnings that will keep us safe.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Contract negotiations between SBC Communications and more than 100,000 employees represented by the Communications Workers of America will begin next Monday under the supervision of a federal mediator. Both sides agreed to mediation from the get-go in hopes of avoiding a major walkout, something the union will not rule out and the company's already made contingencies for. The Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service says SBC is an important part of the country's telecommunications infrastructure and any disruption is undesirable, but there are no signs yet that the government's intent includes forcing a settlement to stave off a strike.
Fighting for years to get back the traditional 3% yearly raise, UAW members voted in favor of lump sum payments and a two-tier contract with American Axle. Wendy Thompson is president of UAW Detroit Local 235. Her members voted against the contract because under the two-tier wage system, new hires will receive less pay than veteran employees, and instead of a wage increase, workers will receive a $5,000 lump sum payment.
You're losing money over the long run if you go with lump sums.
Thompson says the big three auto manufacturers have been pressuring the UAW for years to agree to lower wages for parts workers.
And finally, they have succeeded.
McDonald's gets fried for barring workers in its restaurants in Israel from speaking Arabic. The existence of the ban came to light a couple of weeks ago when an Israeli of Palestinian descent, lauded just last year as one of McDonald's top employees in all of Israel, was fired. She claims it was for using Arabic on the job. The fast food conglomerate disputes that, but has since confirmed it requires workers to speak in Hebrew only. Arab Israelis, who constitute about 20% of McDonald's workforce in Israel, call the policy tantamount to banning the speaking of Spanish in U.S. restaurants.
It is now 5 months that coal miners from the Co-op Bear Canyon mine in Huntington, Utah, are standing on the picket line. 75 workers, mostly Mexican immigrants earning less than $7 per hour, were fired for protesting unsafe working conditions and intimidation of union supporters. Picketing seems to be hurting Co-op's coal production. Truck drivers sometimes sit idle for hours because there isn't any coal to haul.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. So-called free trade is losing support in the United States, and the loss has accelerated in the last 5 years, according to a comprehensive survey by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. 53% of those polled want the U.S. to rethink its free trade policies in the light of the massive job loss it's created. And this year, the PIPA survey finds support collapsing rapidly as you move higher up the income ladder, a complete reversal from the norm.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, George, get out of it. 1-866-889-8894, our number here on the Tom Hartman Program. Our show brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com on the web, or 1-800-511-MAX, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, and organicwine.com. And 26 minutes before the hour. I want to just finish with this and just lay this out. This a press release from Citizens for Corporate Accountability. The U.S. Bureau, released yesterday, the U.S. Bureau, which reports an important U.S. inflation index, has postponed indefinitely releasing the figures. The U.S. Producer Price Index has not been released for January and will not be for February either. The missing PPI can show inflation earlier than the Consumer Price Index, because it measures pressure at manufacturers instead of when inflation finally shows up at the consumer level. According to the report, there are software and computer problems that are delaying the release for a, quote, for an, quote, unheard of amount of time, end quote. However, other departments in the same bureau have not had problems reporting indexes, such as the Consumer Price Index. They go on to say that the measures similar to the missing PPI, which also measure inflation at the production level, have shown a marked rise lately. For example, the Journal of Commerce Index shows an inflation rate of over 40%. Yeah, you get that? These are startling. I mean, this is startling. So we're talking about the kind of economic policy in the United States right now that is not all that different from what the Germans did after World War I, when they just basically, you know, went into massive deficit spending to pay off the huge war reparations that were laid on them at the Treaty of Versailles. And, of course, it led to the situation where it took a wheelbarrow, literally a wheelbarrow's worth of money to buy a loaf of bread. Money was worth less than the paper upon which it was printed, ultimately. Likewise, says the Citizens for Corporate Responsibility news release, likewise, a second index, the ISM prices paid component, showed a jump in inflation that hasn't been seen since immediately before recent bond and stock market crashes. So here we've got a warning. CNN, in their money department, the CNN Money senior writer, Justin Lehart, writes this piece on CNN.com. No inflation? The Fed says it can't find inflation anywhere. Consumers might argue otherwise. That's the headline. Here's the article. The Federal Reserve sees so little inflation in the economy that it's more worried about an unwelcome fall in inflation than an unwelcome rise. You might wonder where the Fed is getting its information, says Justin Lehart. In fact, he goes on to point out the Commodity Research Board's index of commodity prices touched a new 6.5-year high Thursday. The Industrial Materials Index, administered by the Journal of Commerce and the Economic Cycle Research Institute, is rising at a 33.7% annual clip. 33%. Keep in mind, about 6 months ago, the International Monetary Fund warned us that Bush's economic policies would put us in a situation similar to that of Argentina. I was in Argentina 2 years ago, in the middle of that crisis. And I can tell you, it is not a play. That is not the kind of situation that you want to have in America. I was visiting some friends who are, you know, your basic kind of upper middle class family. I mean, the guy probably earns the equivalent of maybe $100,000 to $110,000 a year in U.S. dollars. In that world, I mean, it's not the Argentinian equivalent in dollars, but I mean, you know, he's the high end of the middle class. And they were having to sell their furniture to pay their bills. I mean, the economy was just wiped out. Everywhere you went, middle-class neighborhoods, everything was for sale. It was just, it was frightening. Anyhow, you go back to the CNN.com, CNNmoney.com, apparently. Take a look at the guts of the nation's key reading on inflation, the Consumer Price Index, and you'll find that many of a typical household's big expenditures have risen markedly over the past year. Cost of education, according to CPI data, is up 7%. Medical costs are up 4%. Utilities are up 8.6%. So why does this Consumer Price Index say inflation is only 1.2%? Well, because of what they call weighting. And one big piece of the picture is housing. According, in computing the Consumer Price Index, the Bureau of Labor Statistics assigns a 22.2% weighting, the most of any item, to what they call owner's equivalent rent of primary residence. In other words, what it would cost you to rent a house similar to the house you're living in is the number that they use to calculate inflation. Well, it turns out that rents are falling through the floor right now. And the reason why rents are falling through the floor is because the interest rates are so low that monthly housing payments are fairly low, so more people are buying houses. But if interest rates go up just to 1%, you're going to see that housing bubble burst. You're not going to see the value of houses go up 5 and 10% a year like it has in some cases, in some communities, 15, 20% a year over the last 2 or 3 years. Because this is an artificial bubble that has been created by Alan Greenspan hyping inflation or hyping interest rates down artificially low in order to make the economy look good, to fulfill his conservative agenda, his economic agenda of wiping out the middle class and promoting an economy of the working poor and the very well off. And you know, these guys, well, you'll hear in the next hour. Well, we're going to have a guy in from the Heritage Foundation. He'll lay it out for you. Another, so 22% of the CPI is this equivalent rent thing. It's only grown 2.1% over the past year. It's a meaningless number. I mean, they should be looking at the price of homes rather than what rents are, because rents are falling right now because there are fewer and fewer people wanting to rent because people are actually buying their homes, which is a wonderful thing. Ultimately, I'm all in favor of it. However, a lot of these people are buying homes right on the ragged edge. And if interest rates just go up 1% or 2%, they're going to fall off that edge. Another big chunk is 8.2% of the consumer price index is new and used motor vehicles. And they have actually fallen 3.6%. Why? Because of low interest rates. And it's a new and used vehicle. So everybody's buying a new car because there's zero interest financing. And so there's this glut of used cars. So the price of used cars is actually falling. And so it appears that we don't have inflation. But bond market strategist Miller Tabak is the name of the company. Tony Crescenzi is the name of the guy. He says the CPI is not correct in measuring the cost of living. Surprise, surprise. I mean, have you noticed that there is no inflation? The prices are not going up? And if they do, not if, when they do, I mean, these guys, they are doing everything. They got it's like fingers in the dike trying to prevent this crash. That, God, I hope it doesn't happen. I really hope it doesn't happen. But you look at the math. I mean, George Bush has spent us into bankruptcy and borrowed from our children to do it in order to pay off his campaign contributors and make people feel good about voting for him. And this is no way to run a country. It's just, I mean, you know, it just boils down to that. This is no way to run a country. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, 17 minutes before the hour. Michael in Watertown, Connecticut's on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I was curious. I know the Carlyle Group, Bush Sr., he's a senior advisor for them.
Yeah.
And I know that they are... they're making money, of course, off of the war in Iraq.
They're making billions.
Yes.
Bush Sr., by the way, recently retired from active participation in the Carlyle Group.
Oh, he did?
But one of his brothers, a Bush uncle, is still in it. And George himself, actually, George W., was on the board of one of the Carlyle Group's companies.
Well, that was while his father was president, though.
Yeah.
Was president, though, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And they're kind of switching back and forth. But
yeah.
How much exactly are they making? I mean, among other companies and stuff. I was just curious. What do you know exactly?
I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's no secret. It's easy enough to find. You can just, you know, plug it into Google and track it down.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is that the defense industry, the defense contractors, are just absolutely making out like bandits. In fact, that's one of the few areas where there's actually money being pumped into the economy. We are spending billions of dollars. I mean, you figure the entire United States welfare budget for last year, setting aside, you know, outside of Social Security, the entire budget was $51.7 billion. And we've spent, you know, well over $100 billion in Iraq, the original 80 plus the 87 that George Bush came back for. And that money ultimately is working its way back into the system. And you're seeing some small increase in economic activity as a consequence of all that government spending. That's why 21,000 jobs were created last month, and they were all government jobs, all of them.
That's what seems to be the biggest problem in our country is that a leader can just destroy a middle and lower class while living big and happy. on his own, and he's set for himself for life, and he doesn't care what he does to everyone else.
Well, I really think that, you know, George Bush has never experienced what it's like to work for a living. I mean, every business that he's owned, friends of his father, including the Bin Laden family, have set him up with. He's lost money in three out of four of them. There's the insider trading charge that was never investigated by the SEC, that he made $800,000 bailing out the day before the week that the stock fell in Harkin Energy. He's basically been a player all his life, and I think that there's a problem there. Now on the other side, they'd say, hey, the same thing is true of John Kerry. Not that he's been a player, but that, you know, he's a wealthy guy. He came from a well-off family. His wife is rich. I think that rather than looking at the people, ultimately we have to end up looking at the policies. And what are the policies doing? I think the policies of this guy are just killing us. They're just absolutely killing us. It's the policy of the Bush administration it was rightly called by George Bush Sr. voodoo economics, and it's bringing us to Haiti is voodoo is big there. It's bringing us to that kind of an economy. Armin in Florida is called 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'd like to finish up on your economics, if I may, and then change the subject, if I may, to a wedge issue that they're trying to put through the House now.
What's
they're
that?
Good at that, you know, diversion.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to your economics. Right now he's in Cleveland. You know, 5 or 10 minutes ago he's in Cleveland, Ohio, live, Bush.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there telling, hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
He's sitting there telling everybody that, tax and spend economics is basically a failure and it doesn't create jobs. Well, good God in heaven, you know, what does this guy think he's been doing since he's been in? And, you know, this family, I can't think of any other family in the history of this republic that's benefited more from taxation of the masses, you know, into their economic control. I mean, these people are all about tax and spend as long as it benefits them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Got it, Armin. What was your second point?
Well, the second thing is, of course, the Republicans want to pass through the Congress a bill that gives immunity to corporations about obesity, being sued by obesity, and that's a good debatable subject. But before you make people responsible, in all fairness, don't you have to tell them and make them aware, or make a conscious effort to make them aware of what they're eating, if it's good or bad for them? And this is the same party that just recently, if my understanding is correct, that put off another 2 years of that origin label for all the food that's coming from God knows where to our country.
Yeah, I've got it's funny. I've got the article sitting out on the
So you see what I'm saying? They're sitting there, you know, they just love these little emotional wedge issues that people that don't look closely can't follow them out and see that they're just a basic hyper-diversionary immediate topic, you know, to take the pressure off their hypocrisy and their agenda, which is very detrimental to the good of the social culture of a progressive nature society like we've been and we have been and we hope to be in the future.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. Thank you, Armin. Diversion is the name of the game. Oh, gee, people shouldn't be able to sue McDonald's. Well, you know, arguably they shouldn't be able to. I think that there is something to be said for truth in labeling. On the other hand, I think that there's also something to be said for a lot of people really just not knowing. I mean, you know, I mean, even I'm willing to cut McDonald's some slack on this. I'm my personal theory on this thing is that it all goes back to corn syrup. And because when you that goes back to the economic policy of subsidizing the growth of corn with taxpayer dollars, it's one of the largest of the corporate welfare things is the money that we're pumping into the big agricultural corporations. And corn syrup appears to make people fat quicker than sugar does, than regular sugar. And of course, everything has gone to corn syrup, and it seems to produce diabetes faster. But, you know, according to some studies. But that's just my personal theory. I don't know. I think, you know, frankly, you know, let the courts figure it out. Let people work these things out with a jury of their peers. So Bush's budget going to save America? Is it? Well, not according to the Congressional Budget Office. The Congressional Budget Office says that the $2.4 trillion budget that Bush just proposed a month or so ago, quote, the differences are likely to be small. That is it going to produce, is it going to improve the economy? The differences between now and the future, he says. are likely to be small, output affecting output by less than 0.5 percentage point on average. One half of one percentage point. Bill in Emporia, Kansas is on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, you know, I just had one thing to say or a couple things to say. If we're going to call making Big Macs and Whoppers manufactured.
Yep. Bill, we lost you. Wherever you were, you were not there. Call us back. I think your cell phone croaked, or else John Ashcroft got out of surgery. You know, that's you never know. You just never know. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This is the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman radio program. 5 minutes before the hour. Almost 4 minutes before the hour. Gary in Stafford Spring, Connecticut is on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's up?
Yes, good afternoon. Unfortunately, I lost my stream a little bit while I was listening to you talk about Argentina. But my question was, given what had happened there, what happened to the average middle-class person in regards to their savings and their banks? I recall that people were lined up around the block getting their money out.
Yeah.
What happened with investments?
They just got wiped out, basically. I mean, they created this conservative dream Dickensian economy down there. The IMF came in and they did structural readjustment.
Well, didn't the wealthy also take a big hit too?
It depends on how you define wealthy. The very wealthy did very well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
The middle wealthy and the less wealthy, they took a big hit too, yeah.
And since then, how are the middle class doing? Are they still decimated? As things have gotten better there? If this might be the future of the United States, needless to say, I'm a bit concerned.
Things are very slowly recovering, but they're having to put their economy back together, and they're playing poker with the IMF, and because the IMF is continuing to say you got to do this conservative economic thing, and wipe out the middle class. You can't have social spending that supports the middle class. You can't have unions. You can't mandate unions. You've got to have an open and free market, which basically means corporations get to control everything and dictate the prices. And the Argentinians now are starting to say, no, wait a minute. We would like to have laws that allow unionization. In fact, we might even want to mandate it. We'd like to have the return of a middle class. The IMF is saying, no, you can't do that. Sorry, it's not healthy for corporate profits. It doesn't maximize corporate profits. Yes, corporations can make a living, they can get by, but it doesn't allow them to get really, really rich. And just in the paper yesterday, Argentina may refuse to go along with it. So we'll see. Gary, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate you calling in. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
We'll take care of her. Got my best man Dick looking at it now.
George Bush says he is fighting terrorism. What does he do? Cut funding for first responders. He says he is for education. What does he do? Underfund his own plan. He says he supports our veterans. What does he do? Cut funding for their health care. George Bush said he'd restore honor and integrity to the White House. It's not what you say, George. It's what you do.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission. Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The latest CNN USA Today Gallup survey of American voters finds Massachusetts Senator John Kerry leading George W. Bush among registered voters 50% to 45% and among likely voters by 52% to 44%. A comparison of support for the two candidates by the results of the 2000 election show that among likely voters, Bush is barely ahead in the red states he won 4 years ago, leading Kerry by just 50 to 47%. In the blue states, which Al Gore won, Kerry leads Bush by a substantial margin, 55 to 42%. And in the purple states, where the margin of victory for either candidate in 2000 was 5 percentage points or less, Kerry also leads by a substantial range, 55 to 39%. Kerry's strength in recent polls has forced the Bush campaign to go negative a lot sooner in the campaign than they had expected. George W. Bush has taken to accusing John Kerry of flip-flopping on the campaign trail this week as his campaign moves quickly into negative territory. But a list making the rounds on the internet shows that Bush has done his share of about-faces as well. A list first posted on the Daily Kos website points out that Bush has changed his mind on everything from the Department of Homeland Security and gay marriage to military benefits and the explanation for his mission accomplished banner. The list has broken through to the American media, illustrating how websites and blogs are changing the nature of political campaigns this year. Former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Hans Blix on Tuesday likened the run-up to the war on Iraq to a witch hunt and argued that the subsequent failure to find weapons of mass destruction would dent the public's faith in U.S. and British governments. Blix said that the intelligence information from the U.S. and other countries was exaggerated and that politicians should have asked more critical questions. Blix said that George W. Bush and Tony Blair were mistaken in their views, but he didn't think they acted in bad faith. More after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A Georgia woman was caught trying to use a fake $1 million bill to buy $1,600 worth of merchandise at a Walmart and was later found with two more of the bills in her purse, police said. A clerk at the store immediately noticed the bill was fake when the woman handed it to her on Friday. The woman tried to use two gift cards with only $2.32 of value on them to buy the merchandise, but when that didn't work, she asked the clerk if she could cash the $1 million bill. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have excellent news, Americans. The Bushites have come up with a surefire plan to increase the number of manufacturing jobs in the USA. Yes, while Democrats merely complain about the demise of such jobs, George W. and his team are stepping forward with a creative can-do solution that I think can only be described as astonishing. Their plan is proposed in the Economic Report of the President. In it, George W.'s top economists assert that all of those people working in such fast food joints as McDonald's and Subway really are not part of the service economy, but more accurately, should be reclassified as manufacturing workers, just as those who make cars and other industrial products. After all, contend Bush's crack team of job classifiers, when you insert that meat patty, lettuce and cheese and ketchup into a sliced bun, you are engaged in the combining of inputs to manufacture a product. No less so than those who assemble electronic parts to manufacture, say, a computer. Bush's innovative economists also note that manufacturing is officially defined as the mechanical, physical, or chemical transformation of materials into new products. And they claim, when you heat ground beef, you are, in fact, chemically transforming it into a burger. Of course, if Bush can redefine hundreds of thousands of hamburger flippers as manufacturing workers, then he can statistically hush the critics who've been pointing to the drastic decline in these production jobs. There's another upside for the Bushites, too. Since manufacturing gets special tax breaks, suddenly Bush's backers in the fast food industry serendipitously qualify. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'm with Bush on this one. After all, by assembling nouns, verbs, and whatnot, I've manufactured this piece. And by applying the chemistry of my tiny brain cells, I've transformed raw words into a new product. Manufacturers of the world, unite! Now where do I go to get my tax break?
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eyes!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better-looking roof with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plitanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Ronald Ott, Dr. Ronald Ott, the Herbert and Joyce Morgan Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, is the guy who put it together for Ronald Reagan. In 1987, President Ronald Reagan appointed Ott to lead his administration's efforts to promote the transfer of some federal government functions to the private sector. It's a process also known as privatization. He's written extensively about it. He's the founder and president of Potomac Renovations Limited, a Northern Virginia real estate and residential renovation firm. He has a business background. And he served as the exclusive L.A. gear distributor for Bulgaria, Romania, and Macedonia. He's also served as an economic and privatization consultant to government officials in Russia, Bulgaria, Romania, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and Slovakia. Welcome, Dr. Ott, to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you for inviting me.
I've been in a lot of these countries. I have to say Estonia is my favorite of the Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia bunch there. But anyway,
I haven't seen it since it transformed. I was there during the Gorbachev era, and it was a place where all the restaurants closed for lunch so that the workers could eat lunch.
Yeah. An interesting irony. Yeah. Which brings us to the topic of your writing. I noticed that you have recently written a piece for the Heritage Foundation, basically coming out in opposition to the highway spending bill that's before Congress.
Yes.
And that it seems to me the key kernel of your opposition, if I can just read this sentence, under the current system, special interests absorb as much as 40% of all federal highway spending. I'm assuming by special interests you're talking about unions.
No, it's a variety of things. It's people who want covered bridges to be renovated, flower gardens, historic train stations, transit, beautification programs, Appalachian Regional Commission.
What's wrong with that?
Well, because none of those have anything to do with transportation. See, this is the transportation is a separate account where all the money that goes into it is paid for by motorists.
Right.
So it's a tax that really serves as a user fee. The more you drive, the more you pay, and the more services you get back.
Sure.
What's happened over time is, beginning in about the 1980s, is that you've entitled more and more groups around the country to get a piece of the action.
Yeah.
And so that the motorist who pays the full freight on the Highway Trust Fund only gets back now about 40%.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that, and I thank you for educating us about
it. It's not to say that I don't view those other programs as useless or a waste of money, but for example, roads and national parks ought to come out of the national park budget. So what we do is we sort of mislead people as to how much we're spending on both national parks and general purpose roads.
Yeah, but, okay.
So that was the argument
sure,
there.
Sure, sure.
And obviously there are a variety of other privileges in there, but those are some of the biggest.
But isn't one of your biggest concerns the fact that a lot of this work is done by unionized people?
I unionized people can have whatever jobs they can get. I think people are entitled to unionize. It's when you mandate that a certain wage be paid. For example, highway workers don't have to be unionized. But
right.
They have to get what's called a prevailing wage.
Right.
And the prevailing wages have been determined by the Labor Department for each region. But invariably, to make things easier, they simply take whatever the union construction wage is or something close to it and say, well, this is the prevailing wage in this particular community.
And you think that's a bad idea?
Oh, yeah, because essentially if there are people willing to work on, let's say, highways for $17 an hour, why are we forcing them to, or why are we forcing developers and state transportation officials and the people who pay the taxes to pay them, let's say, $19.50?
Well, I'm sure there's people willing to work on the highways for $3 an hour.
I don't know. You could do better.
Oh, come on! They're standing. They're twice, lined up at the Mexican border.
You get twice that at McDonald's and free food and indoor work with light lifting. So.
Yeah, you don't think that people would work on the highways for $3? I've been in Southern California. It's not just Southern California. I saw the same thing when I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. Illegal immigrants who were working for $3, $4, $5 an hour, cash, off the economy, and doing construction work. I mean, it's all over this country right now.
But they're not getting $3 an hour.
Well, in some cases, yeah.
Well, not for construction. I mean, there may be places where they are.
Yeah.
But generally...
well, let's say $6 or $7 or $8 an hour.
Well, they're getting much more than that. Virtually all of the labor used in home building, for example, is non-union. But all of them are very handsomely paid.
So your position, then, is that the government really should have no business in defining the wages that Americans are getting.
Right.
We should just let the market define that.
Right.
And what if that means that, by the way, if anybody would like to chime in on this conversation, our phone number is 1-866-889-8894. What if that means the end of the middle class?
Well, I'm part of the middle class, and I get very well paid, okay? I'm paid well above the minimum wage, and nobody makes the Heritage Foundation pay me what they pay me. They pay me because I provide them with a valuable product, and and I have my market value, as do most people. I mean, very few people in this country are protected by union contracts. Many few, Very few people in this country are protected by minimum wage, but all of them do, you know, substantially well.
But union contracts and minimum wages have traditionally helped define the price range, the price points at which employers pay people. I mean, it's a simple reality. We've seen since the 1930s.
But the unions are so insignificant in so many parts. As I said, for example, in home building, in commercial construction, the only time unions come into play as if it's a federal contract
and
construction, and so that's such a small, minuscule part of the construction market that, you know, it simply can't. It can only set the tone if let's say it's a very significant part, and all of the labor goes to the federal market.
Just a little.
You have to compete with them.
Yeah, I may be wrong on this, but my recollection of the statistics is that somewhere between 20% and 30% of American workers are unionized right now.
And virtually all of the growth in unions over the last 10 or 15 years has been in government service.
Right.
So, for example, all the people that work in the Social Security Administration are unionized.
Right. And I would say that
it's mostly white-collar service workers.
Right. And I would say that those unionized jobs are one of the things that are holding up the wage base for everybody else.
I would disagree.
So if all those, because we see this in communities where Walmarts come in and they wipe out all the local businesses that are paying higher wages, and Walmart, of course, is, you know, vigorously anti-union, and suddenly the wage bases in communities just start going through the floor.
But, I mean, the same phenomenon occurs with the Lowe's, with the Best Buy, with the Home Depot. I mean, what you're seeing is a revolution in retailing.
Right. In the absence of a living wage. In the presence of a minimum wage, which is a guarantee of poverty-level income. I mean, you've got a situation in Georgia, for example. It's the only state I know of that's actually done the study, where the single largest consumer of welfare products in the state of Georgia are employees of Walmart. I mean, how is that benefiting us, ultimately?
Well, those are probably people. See, the idea is that all the people that are working in Walmart were once making $8 working, you know, in a local shoe store, or $20 working in a local shoe store. All retail at the service end, all hospitality, all restaurant stuff are traditionally the lowest paid jobs on the job scale. And so it's not as if all these people were once working in a hardware store, independently owned downtown Main Street hardware store, for substantially more. They're not.
But the reality is that we had no middle class. We functionally had no middle class in the United States before.
Well, we do have a middle class. We've got, I don't know how you,
before
there are a variety
of
ways to define the middle class, but let's look at, let's say, home ownership. That's a defining characteristic of the middle class. We now, at this moment, have the highest home ownership rate ever in our history.
Yeah, because we have the lowest interest rates. But I'm saying before 1930, before the 1930s, before the institution of a minimum wage, there was essentially no middle. I mean, you go look at the Gilded Age. You know, look at the 1880s, 1890s, 19. I mean, this is what brought out the progressive and populist movement. All these people saying, "No, we want a living wage." I mean, Teddy Roosevelt. It was the cornerstone of his whole campaign. A living wage should be enough for a person to retire on, to save enough to retire on, to pay for all of their educational expenses for their children, put them through college, and enough to pay for all of their medical expenses as well as housing and the necessities of life. And you know, Roosevelt put that in the 30s, and boom, we had this golden era of the American middle class from the 1940s up until Reagan, or 1980s. And since then, we've seen, and I'm sure you will acknowledge, since 1980, we have seen a steady erosion in the purchasing power of what we call the middle class, the average income of what we call the middle class in the United States.
Well, but it depends on how you define it. I mean, if you're looking at manufacturing wages, You may have seen some stagnation, but increasingly manufacturing is a less important part of our economy. I mean, more and more people are going into professional type services that necessitate a college education, and they're being paid handsomely.
Well, except those who are losing their jobs to India and China. Let's take a couple calls.
But I mean, the whole nature of the economy has been the elimination of jobs and the replacement with better ones. I mean, look
yeah.
at all the stable boys that lost their job as the consequence of the of the automobile,
right?
And all the kerosene sellers lost their jobs when you electrified America.
Sure, those are nice little boutique examples, but those were all during times when the United States had a trade policy and tariffs in place that were protecting domestic industries. We might not have protected the buggy whip industry; that didn't make sense. But we were protecting other industries. But let's hear what our listeners have to say about this. Matt in Green Bay, Wisconsin's on the line. He's been waiting for a while here. Matt, welcome to the Tom Hartmann Program. We're talking with Dr. Ronald Utt of the Heritage Foundation.
Wonderful. Glad to be here. Go Packers. Go Green Bay Packers. Quick question for you, a quick observation. When we talk about a living wage, I want to break it down to its very simplest form. You work for $8 an hour. You take home $320 a week. That's $1,200 a month. The government whacks about $200 of that out of your check. You got $1,000 to pay a $600 a month, $500, $600 a month rent payment. You have a kid in daycare that costs you $165 a week to take care of. How do you pay for food? How do you pay for heat and electric? How do you pay a phone bill? How do you save for college for your kids? How do you re-educate yourself to get out of the mired cesspool that you're stuck in? We don't have a living wage in this country. It's a joke. $6.05 an hour, it's just insane. These people can't get ahead. They're stuck in a legal
way. Okay, Matt got your point. I'm gonna take it at that, and we're gonna give Dr. Ott a chance to respond to you right after this break. The music means that it's time to pay the bills. Dr. Ott, stick around. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. 20 minutes past the hour. This is Tom Hartmann. We'll be right back.
The Earth is entering a time of global change like nothing in its history, according to a new book. I'm Gina Waleko for Earthwatch Radio. To understand the changes affecting our climate and atmosphere, scientists often compare the present to the past. Will Steffen is co-author of a new book, Global Change in the Earth System. Steffen says humans are causing enormous shifts in the Earth's atmosphere and climate. He says these changes are so drastic, there's no other time in history that compares. And without these comparisons, it's hard to tell whether the Earth's natural checks and balances will work properly.
The Earth system is now in what we call scientifically a no-analog state. And by that we mean we cannot go back into the past and find another time in Earth's history when so many aspects of the environment are changing, and they are changing at such a fast rate. This means it's very difficult for us to predict just where the Earth's environment is going and how it might change.
For example, humans are putting more carbon dioxide into the air than ever before. Steffen says about half of the CO2 is absorbed by the land and the ocean, but he says that will change in about 50 years. To Steffen, this means there's a window of opportunity to cut down on climate-changing pollutants. He says without action, the Earth may not recover.
What we've tried to do in this book is be as accurate scientifically as we can, not exaggerate anything, not beat anything up. And even at that, it's pretty scary. It's scary for a good reason. I think that there's some very profound changes that are going on to our own life support system, being driven by our own activities. It's not so much a doomsday book, but it's definitely a wake-up call book.
Steffen says it's time to get serious about our impacts on the planet. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to be in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we are doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Is there anybody here who'd like to wrap the flag around an early grave? Is there anybody here who thinks they're standing tall around a battle wave? Is there anybody here who'd like to do his part? Soldier to the world and a hero to his heart. I want to see him. I want to wish him luck. I want to shake his hand.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. Ronald Ott is the Senior Research Fellow for the Thomas A. Rowe Institute for Policy Economic Studies at the Heritage Foundation, www.heritage.org, where he conducts research on housing, transportation, the federal budget. He's the guy in 1987 that Ronald Reagan brought on board to begin the privatization process of America's commons, and one of the leading spokesmen for conservative economics. Dr. Ott, in your piece here on it's titled End the Union's Costly Monopoly of the Air Traffic Control System, you say, however much proponents of unionized controllers argue that the proposed FAA prohibition reflects a special situation, it is in fact just another legislative effort to preserve the status quo and shelter government workers from the competitive forces with which most Americans comfortably exist. I think that gets right to the point that our last caller made. He says it's not so comfortable.
There will always be poor people, unfortunately, and we need to figure out ways to move them up the economic ladder.
And what if those ways include
1920 or 2004 or 2020, you're always going to have an income distribution, and the people at the bottom of it who, for one reason or the other, don't have good jobs need to be helped along through things like better educational system. I mean, one of the things I want to point out is that you've seen a dramatic widening of wages by education. It used to be, and I don't have the numbers right off the top of my head because I didn't know that this is what we were going to be talking about, but if you look about 20 years ago, the wage gap in terms of percentage of incomes that separated a high school graduate from a college graduate was a fraction of the percent that it is today.
Sure. In fact,
what you're seeing now is you know, the jobs that more and more machinery and technology have taken over jobs that required muscle and movement.
Yeah, and this is perpetuating a class system in the United States because many working people cannot afford to put their children through college.
Well, but most colleges now have means-tested programs. I mean, my parents couldn't afford to put me through college, so we simply used a combination of student loans and scholarships for people that had incomes below a certain level.
Having just finished putting three kids through college, I think that you probably went to college in a different era than
Well,
I've
just
right
put
now.
Three kids through college, too, okay. So I have a good sense of what that is. I'm also aware of the fact that many of their friends whose parents didn't make incomes at the level that my kids did were there on a variety of work-study programs, loan programs, scholarship programs.
Oh. Okay. All righty. Good point. We're talking with Dr. Ronald Ott. Harriet in Ann Arbor's on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Harriet, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I'm always dying to call, and I've finally taken the plunge.
And this came about because when your guest said that he's paid his market value, my blood pressure started going up, and I could barely listen to the rest of the conversation.
You must be one of them terrible liberals.
I must be. Anyhow, if I can try to make a couple quick points.
Well, we have about 50 seconds before we have to go to a break.
Not to comment specifically on your guest, but he works for AEI. That group, the Heritage Foundation, the whole list, have incredible wealth to get their message out, to pay huge incomes to people. I've long had a fantasy that these people would lose that position. And
but that's a competitive marketplace too. I mean, he had to compete with other people to get a job at Heritage. I'm sure that there's a long line at their door.
Oh, yeah, but then when we look at people who truly try to educate people in this society, teachers who are paid very little, and the influence that a group like AEI can have because of their endowments.
Yeah, I gotta take it at the end right there, Harriet.
Okay.
And I would say, well, we'll let Dr. Ott respond to that. A lot of folks think that, on the conservative side, think teachers are making way too much. I mean, look at the comment that Rod Page just made. Anyhow, we'll be back right after this break. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Contract negotiations between SBC Communications and more than 100,000 employees represented by the Communications Workers of America will begin next Monday under the supervision of a federal mediator. Both sides agreed to mediation from the get-go in hopes of avoiding a major walkout, something the union will not rule out and the company's already made contingencies for. The Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service says SBC is an important part of the country's telecommunications infrastructure and any disruption is undesirable, but there are no signs yet that the government's intent includes forcing a settlement to stave off a strike.
Fighting for years to get back the traditional 3% yearly raise, UAW members voted in favor of lump sum payments and a two-tier contract with American Axle. Wendy Thompson is president of UAW Detroit Local 235. Her members voted against the contract because under the two-tier wage system, new hires will receive less pay than veteran employees, and instead of a wage increase, workers will receive a $5,000 lump sum payment.
You're losing money over the long run if you go with lump sums.
Thompson says the big three auto manufacturers have been pressuring the UAW for years to agree to lower wages for parts workers.
And finally, they have succeeded.
McDonald's gets fried for barring workers in its restaurants in Israel from speaking Arabic. The existence of the ban came to light a couple of weeks ago when an Israeli of Palestinian descent, lauded just last year as one of McDonald's top employees in all of Israel, was fired. She claims it was for using Arabic on the job. The fast food conglomerate disputes that, but has since confirmed it requires workers to speak in Hebrew only. Arab Israelis, who constitute about 20% of McDonald's workforce in Israel, call the policy tantamount to banning the speaking of Spanish in U.S. restaurants.
It is now 5 months that coal miners from the Co-op Bear Canyon mine in Huntington, Utah, are standing on the picket line. 75 workers, mostly Mexican immigrants earning less than $7 per hour, were fired for protesting unsafe working conditions and intimidation of union supporters. Picketing seems to be hurting Co-op's coal production. Truck drivers sometimes sit idle for hours because there isn't any coal to haul.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. So-called free trade is losing support in the United States, and the loss has accelerated in the last 5 years, according to a comprehensive survey by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. 53% of those polled want the U.S. to rethink its free trade policies in the light of the massive job loss it's created. And this year, the PIPA survey finds support collapsing rapidly as you move higher up the income ladder, a complete reversal from the norm.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I got a friend named Whiskey Sam. He was my boonie rat buddy for a year and now. He said, I think my country got a little off track. Took him 25 years to welcome me back. But it's better than not coming back at all. Many a good man I saw fall. And even now, every time I dream, I hear the men and the monkeys in the jungle scream. Drive on. It don't mean nothing. My children love me, but they don't understand. And I got a woman who knows her man. Drive on.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Dr. Ronald Ut of the Heritage Foundation, Ronald Reagan's specialist on privatization. And Dr. Ut, the reason why I brought up unions and minimum wages here is because it seems to me that the main agenda underneath the privatization agenda very, very often is driving down the cost of labor. Would you disagree?
No, not necessarily. It depends on what the jobs are. But I you know, a lot of the privatization that occurs in the federal government is looking for, looks particularly in the Defense Department, is in search of
cheaper labor,
uniquely skilled individuals. Okay. You could get.
But the government can hire them just as easily as Halliburton.
Hmm.
I mean, the uniquely skilled individuals will work for the government just as well as they will for Halliburton.
No, they won't. No, I mean, if you are a programmer making capable of making, you know, $150,000, $200,000 a year because you have unique skills, you know, the government wage scale will pay you $65,000.
I see.
So you often simply contract that stuff out as you need it.
Don't you think that, I mean, that's an example that probably constitutes, what, maybe 1%, 2%? You know, the real thing that's driving most of the privatization agenda, particularly, for example, privatizing our schools. Let's break the back of the teachers' union. Let's get rid of the unions. Privatizing our parks. I mean, you've got these unionized park rangers, right? How dare they earn so much money? I mean, that's really what's going on here, isn't it?
No, I would say that there is often the savings come through simply better management, greater productivity, use of new technologies. I mean, if you go into the parks, very little has changed in the way things are done.
This is why
there are most communities around the country have long since stopped paving their own streets. When there's streets other than basic emergency pothole repair, most communities, you know, when it's time to do, you know, the southern 20 blocks or something like that, put it out for competitive bid and specialists come in and do it rather than maintaining a costly underutilized. The Park Service is just the opposite. They're back to where most communities were in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, they pave their own roads, they do their own landscaping, they clean their own toilets, you know, they do everything. And I think you can put a lot of those things, a lot of those routine, what I call lawn care janitorial services, out for competitive bid like most of the rest of the government has done.
Yeah, and let's get people in working for minimum wage.
And then use the savings to apply for a better environmental experience for the people that are there. Actually, hire more park rangers. I mean, the idea of getting a trained biologist and putting him in uniform and then having him collect admissions fees for people coming in just doesn't make any sense. You know, movies, theaters have use high school kids working part-time at night, collecting substantially more money than each day than the average park does.
Yeah, although
so I mean, there are all sorts of opportunities to upgrade and save tremendous amounts of money.
Right. And I would say increasingly in movie theaters that I've visited around this country, you've got people in their 20s and their 30s and their 40s and their productive years working for those minimum wage jobs because that's all there is anymore. Richard in Santa Fe is on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Richard, I assume you're listening on KTRC there in Santa Fe.
Good morning. Yes, I am. I just wonder if Dr. Ott would agree that perhaps we can do away with all these janitorial jobs that service people like him. And just see how well he'd get along, he and his family and his kids graduating from school and college. If we get away with all, don't have anybody do this for you, don't have the servants.
Well, you know, if I may, you know, be so bold as to say, I don't think he's suggesting we do away with these jobs. He's just suggesting that, you know, pay these people minimum wage.
What I'm trying to get across to him is that they look at these jobs like the people that do them aren't worth any more money than you're getting, and it's a competitive job, so if someone can work for $5, we're going to have them do it. But if we can eliminate them from helping his status in the world, the ones with the silver spoon in their mouth, eliminate helping them, then we'll see where they go as far as wanting to pay for what I've worked for 55 years in my life. I have an average income, just the average, not $18,000 a year. I'm living at what I would consider comfortably, although there are a lot of things I'd like to have I can't have. But if the doctor would, and as regards to farming these jobs out with the government, if he could guarantee that if they save money, that we'll all save money,
yeah.
Or how about giving the jobs to companies that have no connection whatsoever with party in power.
Yeah, okay. Now we're starting to wander a little bit off topic here, but good points, Richard. Thank you for sharing those. You know, the question I think ultimately, Dr. Ott, comes back to in 1953, Russell Kirk wrote this brilliant book, The Conservative Mind, that in my correspondences with William F. Buckley back 15, 20 years ago, you know, it's very clear this was one of his major, I quoted him in one of my books with his permission. This was one of the major influences in his life, and Kirk goes back to, in the conservative mind, goes back to Edmund Burke. Edmund Burke saying, you know, there must be, and one of the five principles of conservative thought, according to Kirk, was that there must be classes and orders in society. And Burke, of course, Edmund Burke said, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a hairdresser, but it oppresses us all if a hairdresser is allowed to participate in government. Or any of the occupations that I forget how Burke put it, but you know, the less, more unseemly than that, you know. I mean, isn't that really the core of the conservative worldview that we're always going to have the poor with us? You know, they're you know, moral failures, tough luck. It's not, you know, creating a middle class is not the job of government. Creating a middle, you know, if people want to bring themselves up by the bootstraps, let them do it, but otherwise, that's it, eh?
Well, I think kind of going back to the class point and sort of building off the comment by the last caller, I my parents would be shocked and surprised to discover that I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. There wasn't a whole lot of silver in the house that I grew up in. And I can say that that's probably typical of most of the background of most of the people I know around here and work with in Washington. I mean, America's a very fluid place.
But isn't that because you and I had I'm assuming we're of a similar age. I'm 53. That you and I had the opportunity to grow up in the middle of the golden age of the American middle class, which was brought to you by minimum wage laws and unions.
No, I mean, you know, how can you call it the golden age of the middle class if I spent most of my father was had a steady job at a factory, and we always thought we lived all right. We did a vacation, but you know, I wore hand-me-down clothes. I wore used clothes. We never bought a new car.
I'm guessing
what the golden age of that really was.
And my father ran a tool and die shop.
We never thought we were poor.
But yeah, that's the thing.
The standard of living at the time. I mean,
earner could hold a family together, and we never had to worry about being thrown out of our house because we couldn't pay our medical expenses. We never had to worry about what would happen if Dad lost his job. I mean, it was he worked in a union shop. It was a good solid thing. I mean, that's really, you know, the statistics all indicate that there was this golden age of the American middle class that started slowly in the 1930s with the minimum wage laws and with the government getting in as the employer of last resort with the WPA and all these other programs that I'm sure you would call socialist, and that started to die with Ronald Reagan in the 1980s.
Well, you know, then what you would have to find is some sort of statistical proof that this happened. But what we see is substantially rising, on average, standards of living throughout the United States, and not only throughout the United States, but the key thing a lot of people don't realize is that the American standard of living is gaining against most of the European countries and the Japanese. So we are outpacing our competitors.
Yeah, I mean, they're all adopting.
The question is, what exactly is it we're doing wrong? Just to give you a case in point, everybody talks about how bad the economy is. Well, the U.S. economy, and you can go to the London Economist for their tables in the back, which they produce each week. The U.S. economy over the last year grew 10 times faster than the combined average growth of all of the European economies.
Yeah, because they're all in the process right now of adopting conservative economic policies that we started adopting back in the 80s.
So they can have a U.S. standard of living.
That are bringing them to their knees. I mean, right now, the bankruptcies in the United States are higher numerically than they were in the middle of the Great Depression and at the highest point in the history of the United States, personal bankruptcies. I mean, you know,
will always be higher. I mean,
we're always going to have
year after year because you have more businesses and more people. I mean, there's no surprise there.
Yeah. Okay. It's the poor will always be with us. Paul is in Detroit. 1-866-889-8894 is our number. Paul is listening on the radiopower.org, I believe, on the internet. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program. You're on live with Dr. Ronald Utt of the Heritage Foundation.
Hello, Dr. Utt. Last year, Berkshire Hathaway made $536 million in after-tax profits trading in the U.S. currency versus the euro. And the stock recently traded at $80,000 a share. Now, on March the 8th, Reuters and New York Times reported that right now Warren Buffett is gambling against the United States currency.
No, he wrote about it in his shareholder letter last week.
Pardon me?
He wrote about it in his shareholder letter last week. He said he's bailing out of the dollar.
And Reuters reported it on the 8th. And he's betting against the U.S. currency because of the debt that the government is incurring and also the trade deficit. Now, any comment on that?
I can't speak for Mr. Buffett's strategies. And what he sees in the future, that's the opportunities he sees or the risks he sees. But let me just point out that the deficit in Japan for the last 10 years has been substantially higher than the U.S.'s, and the deficits in Germany and France, the two biggest economies in Europe, are also substantially high. So why isn't the deficits in those countries discouraging?
But you just said that those countries are in trouble right now.
Well, I did, but I'm going back to the example of Warren Buffett. He says that Warren Buffett is betting in favor of those countries' currencies.
No, not just those countries. Buffett's trying to bail out of dollars.
You have a whole lot of choices now. You have the euro, which is the currency of those countries. You have the British pound or the Japanese yen. You're not going to put, if you're a person of Warren Buffett's investment skills, you're not going to go into any currency other than those.
Oh, maybe the yuan? I don't think it's a traded currency. In any case, okay, let's move along here. Deidre in Ypsilanti is listening to us on WSDS there. Interesting call sign. Welcome back. Welcome to the program, Deidre. You're on live with Dr. Ronald Utt.
Yes, I had a few comments to make. I heard him say something about McDonald's. You get free food and no heavy lifting. I've worked in fast food. I've carried the oil out. I've had to move the CO2 tanks, which are taller than me, incredibly heavy. Also, when I worked in fast food, we paid for meals. So I think he ought to try to get his facts a little clearer. Also, where I spend a lot of my time, there are two highly trained people. They're in the medical background. And one of them has just left for the Australia, and the other one is seeking South America. They just really have had it here. And you had said something about how skilled labor wouldn't work for the government, and the gentleman had said something to that effect. highly skilled individuals wouldn't work for the government. And I just thought, well, that explains why we have Bush for president now, doesn't it? I mean, he said it himself.
Yeah. Okay. Deidre, thank you very much for your comments. I'm laughing. I suspect you're not. Dr. Ott, thoughts and comments on that? And
then... I thought that was a clever conclusion.
Yeah.
I worked in fast food restaurants. All my kids worked in fast food restaurants, and I can tell you that if it was $8 an hour inside the fast food restaurant versus $8 out on the highway in the rain and the snow and the sleet and the dangerous cars coming by, which was the example we were talking about, I think that's a slam dunk sort of choice unless you're committed to sort of building up your muscles and getting.
But why not just say? We all agree that if somebody wants to be a member of what we historically have called the middle class, which as Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican President Roosevelt, defined it, as being somebody who earned enough money with a single wage earner in a family, could pay all the medical expenses, all the educational expenses, put enough aside for retirement, and pay all the cost of basically living, that if it costs, if somebody has to earn at least $11 or $12 an hour in order to do that, then we set the minimum wage at that. The government has a role in this. Why not?
But society is doing all those things now. We do have a minimum wage now. And yes, we've had a minimum wage in the past, but that's not the driving force in prosperity. The driving force in prosperity is productivity, technological change, and education.
Yeah, okay.
That's where you focus on.
I respectfully disagree. Doug in Madison is on, I believe, Doug, you're listening on the Sirius satellite. Hey, Doug, welcome to the Tom Martin program.
Hi, thank you. I think the crux of this is what defines prosperity. I mean, is it working your fingers to the bone to have a couple of TVs? If we measure our success by the stuff that Americans have accumulated, yes, the standard of living is getting higher. If we measure it in real terms, healthcare, having a secure job, you know, many people I know are very insecure about their job.
Yeah. And Doug, I've got to stop you there because we're running out of time. But good point. And I want to give Dr. Ott a chance to respond to that. I think Doug makes a very good point. And people are going into debt like crazy. Dr. Ott, can you stick around for another 5 minutes or 7 minutes? We can just wrap this up. Okay, great. Thanks. This is Tom Hartman. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back with Dr. Ronald Ott from the Heritage Foundation.
Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I used to think I was free. I used to think we had a democracy.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program here, the True People's Radio. And we're talking with Dr. Ronald Ott of the Heritage Foundation and the architect of Ronald Reagan's privatization programs and conservative economic policies in many regards. And Dr. Ott, I've got two callers on the line. We've got 3 minutes. If it's okay with you, I'd like to let Alan in Virginia just come in, give him 30 seconds to talk, and then I'll give you the last word. And Jeff in Greenville, I think you're going to have to hang on. Is that all right with you? Dr. Ott? Okay, hang on. Okay, here we go. This is Alan in Virginia.
Yes, after giving away our jobs, Alan Greenspan says that we ought to be creative and make more jobs. Will Alan Greenspan give away those jobs also?
Okay, thanks for the question there, Doug. You have the last word, Dr. We actually got 2.5 minutes here. If you want to ponder these things or discuss them.
Oh, I'm not quite sure what to, if there's much to respond to the last comment, because I don't know what Alan Greenspan has in mind.
Yeah. One of the things that Greenspan has said, and he said it on the record in the Wall Street Journal, is that he sees part of his job is to maintain a certain high level of worker insecurity. That's his phrase. So that we won't have what he calls wage inflation. That is, people won't be asking for higher wages.
Okay, I did not see that quote. I'm not familiar with that quote. Usually he tends to be more sensitive about things like
this
that.
This was about 5 years ago.
But I think, you know, there is, and you mentioned on numerous occasions that there was, you know, a golden age of middle class. And I look back on it, and we thought it was great and wonderful because it was better than the stories of what my parents told us about their life was like.
Sure.
But I think there's always been a process of dynamic change and a lot of uncertainty. You know, the notion from the 50s was that, you know, you got your job at the factory, it was a good-paying job, and you had it for life, and you never had to think about it. What was something of an anomaly in the history of the world?
Well, see, that's the thing. I would say it was an anomaly. It was brought about by government.
If you look back...
But I'm sorry, we're at the end here. Dr. Ronald Lott of the Heritage Foundation, www.heritage.org. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. This is Tom Hartman. You're in the middle of the vast, radical middle conspiracy.
It's here they got the range and the machinery for change. And it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken. And it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report. Sociologists often turn to infant mortality rates as an indicator of a country's well-being, and by this measure, we're slipping. For the first time in more than 40 years, the overall infant mortality rate increased from 6.8 deaths per 1,000 in 2001 to 7 such deaths in 2002. The Centers for Disease Control speculates women's decisions to have children later in life may account for the higher rate, though the CDC's report makes no mention of poverty, joblessness, or food insecurity.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The latest CNN USA Today Gallup survey of American voters finds Massachusetts Senator John Kerry leading George W. Bush among registered voters 50% to 45%, and among likely voters by 52% to 44%. A comparison of support for the two candidates by the results of the 2000 election show that among likely voters, Bush is barely ahead in the red states he won 4 years ago, leading Kerry by just 50 to 47%. In the blue states, which Al Gore won, Kerry leads Bush by a substantial margin, 55 to 42%. And in the purple states, where the margin of victory for either candidate in 2000 was 5 percentage points or less, so leads by a substantial range, 55 to 39%. Kerry's strength in recent polls has forced the Bush campaign to go negative a lot sooner in the campaign than they had expected. George W. Bush has taken to accusing John Kerry of flip-flopping on the campaign trail this week as his campaign moves quickly into negative territory. But a list making the rounds on the internet shows that Bush has done his share of about-faces as well. A list first posted on the Daily Kos website points out that Bush has changed his mind on everything from the Department of Homeland Security and gay marriage to military benefits and the explanation for his mission accomplished banner. The list has broken through to the American media, illustrating how websites and blogs are changing the nature of political campaigns this year. Former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Hans Blix on Tuesday likened the run-up to the war on Iraq to a witch hunt and argued that the subsequent failure to find weapons of mass destruction would dent the public's faith in U.S. and British governments. Blix said that the intelligence information from the U.S. and other countries was exaggerated and that politicians should have asked more critical questions. Blix said that George W. Bush and Tony Blair were mistaken in their views, but he didn't think they acted in bad faith. More after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A Georgia woman was caught trying to use a fake $1 million bill to buy $1,600 worth of merchandise at a Walmart and was later found with two more of the bills in her purse, police said. A clerk at the store immediately noticed the bill was fake when the woman handed it to her on Friday. The woman tried to use two gift cards with only $2.32 of value on them to buy the merchandise, but when that didn't work, she asked the clerk if she could cash the $1 million bill. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Am I the only one who sometimes comes across a gut-wrenching, jaw-dropping story in the daily paper and then wonders, why did they bury this? Why isn't this the lead story on the front page? I had this reaction when I read a story with the deceptively bland headline of Modified Seeds Found Amid Unmodified Crops. Most people scanning the New York Times last month would either have missed this story entirely, since it was stuck down on the bottom of page 6 in section C, or simply would not have bothered to read beyond the boring headline. A better headline would have been Bioengineered Frankenfood Seeds Contaminating U.S. Food Supply, for that's what the story was about. It reported on new findings by the Union of Concerned Scientists, a respected group that recently ran systematic tests on the extent to which corporate-produced, genetically tampered seeds have gotten out of control and spread their altered DNA into previously uncontaminated seeds. The genetically modified organisms, engineered in the labs of such giants as Monsanto, range from potatoes that have pesticides built into them to vegetables that contain particular drugs. This test was of corn, canola, and soybean seeds that were not the bioengineered variety and supposedly would be pure, free of genetic alteration. The scientists found, however, that more than two-thirds of the 36 batches they tested contained traces of DNA from genetically engineered varieties, meaning that, despite assurances from the companies and our lame government regulators, the engineered demon is loose. As one of the scientists put it, the door to seed contamination is wide open. Even more alarming is the blasé attitude of the contaminators. Rather than trying to protect the purity of our food supply, industry flacks say that the world should simply agree to, quote, acceptable levels of contamination. This is Jim Hightower saying, if that's unacceptable, call the scientists to get the story the media is burying. 617-547-5552.
I wonder who that is. What can I do you for?
A yodeler. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a sturdy, firm floor with Blightanium plywood. Floors made with Blightanium plywood are stiffer and more versatile than floors made with other subflooring materials. Blightanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Tom Hartman here with you. 7 minutes past the hour. Wasn't that interesting? At the end of the last hour, Dr. Ott of the Heritage Foundation saying the what I refer to as the golden age of the American middle class from the late 1930s through basically the Reagan administration, when he helped create the economic policy of that administration, was an anomaly. And it was. It was an anomaly caused by minimum wage laws and laws that allowed labor to organize itself. If wealth can organize itself into corporations and they can organize themselves into trade associations, then labor should be able to organize. Yeah, but anyway, it was an interesting debate. Moving along, our phone number 1-866-889-8894. And William D. Hartung is the author of a book, a remarkable book, How Much Are You Making on the War, Daddy?, and numerous op-ed pieces and other things that have been around. He runs the Arms Trade Resources Center, a project of the World Policy Institute. He's worked in the Council on Economic Priorities, where he headed up path-breaking studies of the nuclear weapons and Star Wars lobbies in the 1980s, and he's a frequent contributor to The Nation. And has appeared on programs all over the place, from Hannity and Combs and Lou Dobbs to the BBC World. William Hartung, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I'm pleased to have you on here. You talk about the 32. Well, let me just frame this. Let me back out a little bit and frame this. In our last hour, we were talking with a conservative who was suggesting that. If people make it in the world, they do because they pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and that we will always have poor people and we will always have poverty in America and everywhere else in the world, and that's really not an issue of government. I'm using my own words. These are, I'm not even paraphrasing. I mean, this is the worldview that he was representing. And that, anybody who's really successful, it's like because they were very smart or very noble or very good. And yet, you've done an extraordinary job of chronicling the lives of people and the circumstances of people who, and I realize this isn't the focus of your book, but of people who've gotten very rich because they happened to have the right connections or be born into the right families. And talk to me a little bit about that on this, how much are you making on the war, Daddy, here?
Yeah, well, I think the history of America is kind of a battle between those two visions. And I think what happens is, there are periods where innovators are allowed to operate. I mean, you do have your Thomas Edisons, you do have your people who bring something to the country through their own energy and their own, work ethic. But you also have periods like the late 19th century, like now, where people who basically are elbowing talented people out of the way to get at the trough, who are making it impossible for innovators to contribute. And that's what the Bush administration really seems to represent. And the thing that I track in the military sphere, we have, when Bush first came in, they appointed to top positions 32 former executives, paid consultants, or major shareholders from top military contractors. Donald Rumsfeld was putting so many executives from the military industry in the Pentagon that a writer for the Washington Times described it as Department of Defense Incorporated.
Well, wasn't Rumsfeld a multimillionaire paid annually lobbyist for the Star Wars industry before he became?
Well, essentially, he was part of that whole network. I mean, he was given an award, the Center for Security Policy, which was run by Frank Gaffney, a guy so far to the right that he was kicked out of Reagan's Pentagon. And Gaffney's group was funded by places like Lockheed Martin and Boeing. Rumsfeld himself was a contributor to that group, and he won their annual award, the Keeper of the Flame Award, which was awarded at their annual fundraising dinner. So he was part and parcel of that Star Wars lobby, and he, as a result of an amendment that a guy from Gaffney's board, Kurt Weldon, representative from outside of Philadelphia, put in, ran this commission assessing the ballistic missile threat, which exaggerated, you know, how soon we might have to worry about long-range missiles coming from places like North Korea. So he was very much a partisan. He was on the board of Empower America, which ran misleading ads against folks like Barbara Boxer and Harry Reid when they were running in the late 90s for re-election, claiming that they, you know, they were not willing to defend us from dangerous missiles pointed at our families and that sort of thing. So, you know, the notion that when he came in, he got virtually a free pass because the notion was, well, he's done the job before back in the Ford administration. He's been a business executive. He's a picture of competence. But really, he was every bit as much an ideologue in the defense sphere as John Ashcroft was in over at Justice. But I think he, because he speaks in these kind of authoritative, measured tones, because he has a tendency to put his questioners off guard by asking questions about their questions and so forth.
Right.
He never really was called to account for his record and his connections until he was well ensconced. And then, of course, once we had the 911 attacks and we were in the midst of the war on terror, his connections were never really fully probed, at least in the mainstream press, except for the occasional article by somebody like Michael Dobbs of the Washington Post or somebody perhaps like Paul Krugman in the New York Times.
Yeah. You say when Dick Cheney's former company, Halliburton, received a contract worth up to $7 billion to deal with oil fires in Iraq in the wake of Gulf War II, it raised eyebrows around the world, but it was treated as business as usual in Washington, D.C.,
Well, it's funny. I mean, there have probably been more articles saying, gee, I think it's not fair to say that, you know, Dick Cheney has any special influence, you know, in the fact that Halliburton is getting all these contracts.
Oh, well, Halliburton got those contracts because they were the only company in the world that could move in there quickly, weren't they?
That's what is claimed, but it's interesting. Mark Feynman, a wonderful reporter for the Los Angeles Times, who unfortunately died of a heart attack over in Iraq, did a story right around the time that they got that contract. And he interviewed several companies, including a U.S. company that was better qualified to put out oil fires in Iraq than Halliburton was. Halliburton itself had no capability to do it, but they did have a company that they had a partnering arrangement with, and that company was itself going through financial troubles, was about to do some sort of financial reorganization. If there had been significant oil fires in Iraq, which was a distinct possibility, they were not in a position to do it. And even the few that there were, they had to bring in a third company to help. And that company said, you know, well, gee, if you had brought us in earlier on the planning, we would have been much better equipped to help with this. So basically this notion that they secretly gave it to Halliburton because Halliburton was ready to move in there when the rubber hit the road and do the job, in fact, was not the case. What that secrecy hid was the fact that Halliburton and its partner, in fact, were uniquely ill-equipped to have surge capacity to deal with a large number of oil fires.
But they had the ability to hire the people, the hire of the company that could hire the company that could do the work. And
right,
they,
and unfortunately, the company that they had the longstanding relationship with was one of the at that moment in time one of the least well-equipped companies to do the job.
And
that's been there.
But they were part of the old boy network.
It's sort of like hiring a general contractor to build your house, and the guy is hiring, you know, his best buddy instead of the guy who's best equipped to do the work.
Yeah, ultimately. 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with William Hartung, whose new book, How Much Are You Making on the War, Daddy? A Quick and Dirty Guide to War Profiteering in the Bush Administration, is just out. He's also written a great piece in, where was this published, atimes.com?
It's the Asia Times.
Ah, the Asian Times.
I don't know why they use that. It's kind of a cryptic shorthand.
Yeah, they should have attributed it right up at the beginning. The Middle East War, just whose business is it anyway? I don't want to get into that, too. We got a couple callers here. Jim in Dallas is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're
well,
live with William Hartman.
Good afternoon,
Hartman.
Tom. Hey, I'd like to ask your guest, over the last 2-3 years, the defense sector has been really the only sector, really, for the most part, that's made some really great gains. And the Carlyle Group, who is a defense contractor, you know, when Bush Incorporated, what kind of money, directly or indirectly, is this crime family making off this illegitimate war? Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Good question.
Well, the defense sector, because, you know, since George W. Bush has come in, the military budget has gone from $300 billion to $400 billion. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have cost about $180 billion in emergency appropriations over and above what's in the annual Pentagon budget. Homeland Security Department has gone from about $20 billion to $40 billion a year. And we've got subsidies for weapons exports that are probably running another $8 or $10 billion a year. So it's a good time to be a weapons contractor. The most recent report from the Pentagon on its top 100 contractors shows that Halliburton went from 2002 to 2003 from less than $500 million a year from the Pentagon to $3.9 billion. So they're getting almost seven times as much. Lockheed Martin went from $17 billion to $21.9 billion. So you have one company getting over $20 billion a year. They get more in that one company of our tax money than the largest federal welfare program, temporary assistance
well,
to families.
All of the federal welfare programs together only equal about $50 billion.
Yeah, so and that is about what the big three contractors get, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Boeing. So
yeah. This is incredible. Carla
mentioned is an investor, so they invest in companies like United Defense,
right.
And they've got a company that is involved in screening employees that go into the airlines, that go into the intelligence community, that go into sensitive jobs dealing with terrorism and security. So a book by Dan Briody called The Iron Triangle quotes some of their principles as saying they need to be the company that is making has benefited the most of any company from the war on terrorism.
They mean
Herbert Walker Bush.
Carlisle, you mean?
Yeah. George Herbert Walker Bush, the president's father, is a representative of theirs who goes and gives speeches to prospective investors at $100,000 a pop. James Baker, who's now representing this administration and trying to get the Iraqi debt forgiven, is a senior counselor to that group. Frank Carlucci, who is Donald Rumsfeld's college roommate and a close friend of his, is a principal of that organization. It's been described by Time Magazine as a Republican administration in exile. And the problem with Carlisle is because they function as an investment group in sensitive security-related companies, what they really need is information. So every time Carlucci sits down with Rumsfeld, every time Herbert Walker Bush talks to his son, every time Herbert Walker Bush, as a former president, gets an intelligence briefing, which he's entitled to do, they can trade on that information or the perception that they've got that inside information to lure investors to send money their way, to decide, oh, it's time for us to dump a little bit of our United Defense stock and move into another area.
Well, there's other members of the Bush family in this, too, aren't there? I mean, aren't Neil Bush, the president's brother, and was it William Bush, the president's uncle, are involved in this?
Well, other members of the family have had marginal involvement, but
just enough to make a few million here and there.
Is front and center, and George Walker Bush himself, before he became president, had some involvement because Carlisle put him on the board of a company called Cater Air, which was involved in doing catering services for airlines. And when they bought that from one of the airline companies, he was their man on the board. So the whole family has one way or the other, dined at the Carlisle trough at one time or another.
Yeah, interesting. We're talking with William Hartung, the author of How Much Are You Making on the War, Daddy? This is Tom Hartman, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
A slight warming of the Earth's atmosphere could seriously magnify the greenhouse effect. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Our use of fossil fuels has put a lot of extra carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and scientists say that's part of the reason the Earth is getting warmer. But the extra CO2 does more than magnify the natural greenhouse effect. It helps fill the atmosphere with yet another greenhouse gas. That gas is water vapor, and when it comes to trapping heat in the atmosphere, it's twice as efficient as carbon dioxide. Dick Weatherald is a climate expert with the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He says carbon dioxide is the trigger that will produce higher concentrations of airborne water vapor.
Water vapor is probably the strongest or most effective greenhouse gas. But the carbon dioxide, of course, is the trigger because it initiates the greenhouse warming. And then once the greenhouse warming starts taking place, what that does is it increases the temperature of the atmosphere so that it can hold more water vapor than it could before.
Weatherald calls this chain of events a water vapor feedback. A slight bit of global warming puts more water vapor into the atmosphere. The water vapor traps more heat that's created by solar energy, and the atmosphere gets even warmer. Weatherald says the consequences of that warming will be hard to avoid.
The problem is that it's going to take a long, long time for the system to stabilize, even if we drastically cut greenhouse gases. So there are probably some changes, some global warming that we're going to have to deal with and live with.
Weatherald is the author of a paper on global warming that will be published this spring in the Journal of Climate. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the CN program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage. And
here's today's Dow Bob Report. So-called free trade is losing support in the United States, and the loss has accelerated in the last 5 years, according to a comprehensive survey by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. 53% of those polled want the U.S. to rethink its free trade policies in the light of the massive job loss it's created. And this year, the PIPA survey finds support collapsing rapidly as you move higher up the income ladder, a complete reversal from the norm.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. We're talking with William D. Hartung, the author. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Hartung, yes.
Hartung, yeah. The author of How Much Are You Making on the War, Daddy? A Quick and Dirty Guide to War Profiteering in the Bush Administration. We've got about 5 minutes left in the segment here, and Mark in Dallas is on the line with a question. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
To make a comment on Dr. Ott, but I'll follow up here. The gentleman, the author, has written this book, and I think the print media has done a good job in bringing a lot of the issues in the Bush administration to the forefront. The question for the author, though, is, are you starting to see the dam break in terms of television and radio and the willingness to talk about these stories, or is there still a wall of silence trying to protect the president over these issues?
That's an excellent question, Mark.
What's
the situation there?
Certain elements of the issues, certainly the behavior of Halliburton in Iraq has started to break through because there's been so many different elements to it. There's been a whistleblower who worked for them over in Kuwait who testified to the Senate Democratic Policy Committee a couple of weeks ago. There's a Halliburton hearing tomorrow in the full House Government Reform Committee. So I think on that level you begin to hear some of what needs to be heard, but I think there's still a little bit of a sense of, oh, this always happens, they all do it. I don't think the press has fully grasped that there's a bit of a difference with this administration, that they've gone a bit further. They've really sort of crossed the line. They've gone more than further.
I mean, they have gone over the top, over the cliff, down the side,
exactly
into the hole.
and you know, it's in that sense, I think a lot of the best press coverage has been, you know, the Washington Post puts it on the style page. It's been on the business page. It's been in different op-ed columns. I'd like to see it a little bit more front and center in the regular news coverage. So, you know, if you hunt around, you can get the story. But I think they need to bring it up one more step. Yeah.
And you know, we're all doing our piece.
They're not
in that.
Quite on top of it the way I'd like to see.
Yeah, and here you are, this book published by Nation Books and Avalon and a great group of folks. And, you know, spreading the word. We're spreading the word here. Nathan in San Francisco is on the line with some comments. Hey, Nathan, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I just wanted to talk about supply-side economics and how the reason that supply-siders want to cut taxes is that taxes take money out of the private economy, but in the U.S. But, of course, imports do the same thing. They take that money that they're trying to use to stimulate the economy and ship it off shore.
So they try
to cut taxes, but if they keep allowing all these imports, the supply side policies never work.
Yeah, excellent point. And thanks for sharing that, Nathan. 1-866-889-8894. Do you see importing and exporting as a piece of this, William Harton?
Well, I think to some degree it's really about redistributing the money to their networks, you know, under the guise
of
trying to help everybody.
Yeah, this is really more
there's
like
tax cuts at the top, and then they're helping certain favored corporations, and they're trying to convince the average person out there that they're going to get their piece of this. But the way this is organized, they're never really going to get their piece of this unless their name happens to be, you know, Dick Cheney or George W. Bush or some close.
So this is really sort of run like the mafia.
In a way, yeah. I think Don Rumsfeld is aptly named. I mean, you know, it's really
Don.
A case where, and even the way they run their foreign policy, it's like in the 1980s, you know, Saddam Hussein was their friend and they were cozying up to him. And then he went one step too far when he invaded Kuwait, so they had to take him out.
But it is
very much, it's the rule of force, it's who you know, it's if you're in their circle, you get money, and if you're outside their circle, you get the sharp end of the stick.
You know? There you go. Well, William Hartung, I'm sorry we're up against hard breaks here. We've been talking with William Hartung, the author of How Much Are You Making on the War, Daddy. William, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, this is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We will be back.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Communications and more than 100,000 employees represented by the Communications Workers of America will begin next Monday under the supervision of a federal mediator. Both sides agreed to mediation from the get-go in hopes of avoiding a major walkout, something the union will not rule out and the company's already made contingencies for. The Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service says SBC is an important part of the country's telecommunications infrastructure, and any disruption is undesirable, but there are no signs yet that the government's intent includes forcing a settlement to stave off a strike.
Fighting for years to get back the traditional 3% yearly raise, UAW members voted in favor of lump sum payments and a two-tier contract with American Axle. Wendy Thompson is president of UAW Detroit Local 235. Her members voted against the contract because under the two-tier wage system, new hires will receive less pay than veteran employees, and instead of a wage increase, workers will receive a $5,000 lump sum payment.
You're losing money over the long run if you go with lump sums.
Thompson says the big three auto manufacturers have been pressuring the UAW for years to agree to lower wages for parts workers.
And finally, they have succeeded.
McDonald's gets fried for barring workers in its restaurants in Israel from speaking Arabic. The existence of the ban came to light a couple of weeks ago when an Israeli of Palestinian descent, lauded just last year as one of McDonald's top employees in all of Israel, was fired. She claims it was for using Arabic on the job. The fast food conglomerate disputes that, but has since confirmed it requires workers to speak in Hebrew only. Arab Israelis, who constitute about 20% of McDonald's workforce in Israel, call the policy tantamount to banning the speaking of Spanish in U.S. restaurants.
It is now 5 months that coal miners from the Co-op Bear Canyon mine in Huntington, Utah, are standing on the picket line. 75 workers, mostly Mexican immigrants earning less than $7 per hour, were fired for protesting unsafe working conditions and intimidation of union supporters. Picketing seems to be hurting Co-op's coal production. Truck drivers sometimes sit idle for hours because there isn't any coal to haul.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. So-called free trade is losing support in the United States, and the loss has accelerated in the last 5 years, according to a comprehensive survey by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. 53% of those polled want the U.S. to rethink its free trade policies in the light of the massive job loss it's created. And this year, the PIPA survey finds support collapsing rapidly as you move higher up the income ladder, a complete reversal from the norm.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All my days won't be dances of delight when I'm gone, and the sands will be shifting from my sight when I'm gone. Can't add my name into the fight while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be laughing at the lies when I'm gone, and I can't question how or when or why when I'm gone. Can't live proud enough to die when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
And welcome back to our program. You're in the Truth Arena. This is Tom Hartman. 2003, turns out, the stats are in. It was the hottest summer in 500 years. I'm sitting here looking at about 2.5 feet of snow right now outside my window. We had an incredibly, brutally cold winter here in Vermont. And this is consistent with the predictions of global warming. It's not, I mean, yes, the planet gets warmer, and the extremes become more extreme because the atmosphere has more energy in it. Last year's, this Associated Press story by Paul Rector, last year's deadly summer in Europe probably was the hottest on that continent in at least five centuries. More than 19,000 people died. And here we have those who say, well, you know, we should just put all the business of government in the hands of private corporations. We really should just privatize everything. You know, government, you know, maybe they should run the police department, but even the cops shouldn't have unions. I mean, after all, unions are an artificial drag on the wage marketplace. And what business is it? See, there's this thing called the commons, the stuff that we all share, and the atmosphere is part of it. Ultimately, our weather, since we have the ability to affect it, whether we like it or not, we're discovering more and more, we are changing the weather. And this is part of the commons. And this is, you know, and therefore you got the conservatives out there going, no, no, we shouldn't talk about these things. No, there is no global warming. Now the mantra, well, yes, there is global warming. Of course, it goes in cycles. We all knew that. Yeah, every couple thousand years, yes, every few hundred years. You've got cycles within cycles. Well, yes. Yes, of course. And you have hundreds of millions of tons of carbon being dumped into the atmosphere, and it's a greenhouse gas. Guess what happens? The study showed that European winters were also warmer now. The average temperature Winter annual temperatures during the three decades from 1973 to 2002 were the warmest of the last 500 years. Moving along, by the way, our number 1-866-889-8894. You have heard in the last hour and a half, those of you who have been listening continuously, you've heard the conservative worldview. You've heard, I'm not sure how I'd characterize William Hartung's politics. I didn't ask him. But the other side of the story, as it were, what kind of world do you want to live in? Tommy Thompson recently said that by his definition, this is our Secretary of Health and Human Services. This is the guy who is ultimately responsible for the medical care systems in America. Tommy Thompson said, by his definition, every American already has full health coverage. Did you know that? That you have full health coverage? The Seattle Times reports Thompson said, and I quote, "Even if you don't have health insurance, you are still taken care of in America. That certainly could be defined as universal coverage," end quote. The Center for American Progress adds, Thompson's comments are a crass dismissal of the hardships suffered by the 43 million Americans who lack health insurance. Overall, the uninsured tend to be sicker and to die sooner. We know this. I mean, it's no secret. Does it make... I mean, you know, if the only way you can get health care is to show up in an emergency hospital room, and in many cities, you know, sit there, if it's not an absolute crisis and you're not bleeding out on the floor, sit there for as much as a day. Well, that's just fine with Tommy Thompson. 18,000 unnecessary deaths occur every year because of lack of health insurance. And how many people died in 9/11? Further, the United States loses the equivalent of $65 to $130 billion annually. This is a large amount of money, my friends, as the result of the poor health and early deaths of uninsured adults. These statistics are from a study done by the Institute of Medicine. This is, you know, a medical group. Thompson made his comments in defense of the administration's plan to spend nearly $1 billion to establish universal health care in Iraq. Iraq is going to have single-payer health care. They're going to have one central agency that buys all the drugs. They're going to have one central agency that pays all the doctor's bills. People are not going to have to fill out multiple forms. They're not going to have to beg their insurance company. They're not going to have to figure out, is the deductible paid on this or not? They're not going to have to call up the insurance company over and over and over again and say, would you please pay that bill? I'm getting nasty mails and I'm getting nasty things in the mail from the. No. In Iraq, they're going to have universal health care. It's costing $1 billion. And we're paying for it. And Tommy Thompson thinks that's just fine. Because Americans, according to him, already have universal health coverage. We've already got it. No problem. Did you see this thing in the Wall Street? It's the last 20 minutes here of the show, and I just want to go through a few things that are kind of loose ends from the day. The best of the rest of the news, as it were. This is from the Wall Street Journal yesterday. USDA prohibits mad cow tests by outside labs, causing outcry. Get this: if you're a beef supplier or whatever, if a little cattle ranch or whatever, as in fact this one guy was, a Missouri rancher, David Luker. And he wants to have his cows, he wants to have his meat tested for mad cow disease so he can say, hey, there's no mad cow disease in my meat. And so he goes ahead and he tries to find a private lab that'll do it. And there's a private lab he's contracting with and they're going to do it. And the USDA comes in and says, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. I'm quoting you from by Scott Kelman, this article in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. The USDA, which conducts only limited testing of its own, doesn't allow private testing for the fatal brain wasting diseases in cattle. Why? It's for the same reason that when Ben and Jerry's was a little ice cream company here in Vermont, and they started putting on their label that the milk that they used only came from cows that were not injected with synthetic growth hormones, the USDA came down on them, too, at the request of Monsanto. Because people in the marketplace might get confused. You might be confused. You might think that if this ice cream says no RGBH, that all the other ice cream has it in it. You might think that if this meat says it's been tested and it doesn't have mad cow disease, that all the other meat isn't safe. And the government wouldn't want you to think that. Now, at the same time, we've got the situation where American beef producers would like to sell their products overseas. Japan, and actually there's a total of, where did the list go here? The agency's sometimes conflicting mission, it's a $27 billion industry. And I can't find, oh, here it is, I'm sorry, it's the wrong page. Creekstone Farms Premium Beef LLC, a meat packer that slaughters cattle at a plant in Arkansas City, Kansas, in February, said it would build its own mad cow testing laboratory, an announcement that prompted a USDA warning that anyone tested without its testing without its approval could face criminal charges. Creekstone says it's trying to restart shipments to Japan, which insists on 100% testing first. You can't sell even a burger in Japan if it hasn't been tested for mad cow disease. The Bush administration's refusal to satisfy this request, I'm reading here from the Wall Street Journal, is forcing some U.S. meat packers to lay off workers. The borders of more than 50 countries remain closed to American beef exports valued at $3 billion annually. Now, why would the USDA do this? Well, Michael Levine, the president of the meat business at Organic Valley, a nationwide co-op of organic farmers, says, I think the USDA is just petrified of finding more instances of BSE, of mad cow disease. He's, you know, conspiracy theory? I don't know. It's in the Wall Street Journal. Is the USDA concerned about this? Jane in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Jane, 1-866-889-8894, our phone number, by the way. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. I was listening I was listening to what you were saying, and I forgot why I called. But
I think it had to do with health care.
Oh, yeah. Universal health care. I can't understand why they keep fighting universal health care. And I can't understand why Bush is doing what he's doing, letting the prices go high and high, and then the copay is just as high. And I heard his speech today, and it made me ill because everything he was saying in Ohio was he just said that this is what's going to happen, but it's not happening.
Yeah.
And
He's saying up is down, left is right.
And if he gave universal health care to Iraq, maybe he should go to Iraq if he's taken so much good care of Iraq and not the United States.
Yeah. We could organize a collection, Jane, for the airplane ticket.
Yeah. I mean, or let Air Force One take him there.
Well, you know, the last
taxpayers will be glad to pay for it.
Well, actually, we did pay for it the last time he went there, and we also paid for the plastic turkey. In fact, there was an article in the paper yesterday about how the plastic turkey that was served to him on that photo op, and that entire dinner, actually, the contractor that was the subcontractor to the subcontractor that had gotten the contract from Halliburton to serve that meal has not been paid.
Well,
and they are very upset that they have not been paid for that plastic turkey that George Bush used in his photo op.
Well, what's going on with the president? Absolutely driving, I don't know if it's driving anybody else crazy, but it's sure driving me crazy. I don't know why anybody would want to vote any more Republicans into Congress. And then you had that man from Heritage House, and I wanted to ask you, if Heritage House was strictly Republican, and what is Brookings? Brookings must be Democratic.
Yeah, Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank.
It's next to the Senate.
Yeah, yeah, they're right down the street, and there, I know some of the folks there. I've spoken there actually, and I think that they're well intentioned. I think that they're wrong. But I think that you've got people there who really believe the religion of the conservative ideology and the conservative economics, and who really believe that the golden age of the American middle class was, to use Dr. Ott's word, an anomaly. And you know, who don't they just don't understand. They don't understand, you know, rational economics. They don't understand liberal economics and liberal democracy. Jane, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. It's always great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Bob in South Carolina is on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Good. I just wanted to make a point, and I think I understood this Dr. Ott correctly. He said that he came from a fairly lower middle-class family and took advantage of scholarships and programs, college loans, in order to go to school.
Liberal programs! They were liberal programs he took advantage of. That was my point to him, is that he and I grew up in the middle of the echoes of Lyndon Johnson, the echoes of Franklin Roosevelt.
And now that he's got his, he says, screw everybody else, right?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't put words in his mouth, but I would say broadly that's the conservative agenda. It's now, hey, I got mine. There will always be poor among us. If people don't want to work for $8 an hour, they must be lazy. There must be something wrong with them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the conservative worldview. I mean, and they're not ashamed of it. You know, they're unashamed of it.
One more thing, Tom.
Sure.
I'd like you to take a page, and I hate to say this, but take a page out of the Gingrich playbook, where during the impeachment hearings, he never gave a speech where he used the word Clinton, where he didn't use the word Lewinsky in close proximity to it. And all of us Democrats, we need to never say the word Bush unless we also use the phrase miserable failure.
Yeah.
Right alongside of it.
Yeah, a good one, Bob. Bob, thanks for the call and thanks for the suggestion. I think that's I'm frankly not as partisan as Newt Gingrich, but it's well taken, and Bush is a miserable failure. I think he's probably the worst president we have ever had in the history of the United States, with the possible exception of John Adams and maybe Ulysses S. Grant, although, you know, time will tell. Kodak is in Columbia, what, North Carolina, South Carolina? Where about
South.
South Carolina, that's right.
South Carolina.
I always mix that up. Hey, Kodak, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to say hi to all the fellow truckers and also the people in the chat room. It's interesting. I just had this conversation with the employees of the company that I lease to. I guess I could probably offer it.
You got about 30 seconds, Kodak.
Twice a month. And the thing was, what kind of America do we want to have with was a freshman, and it's amazing how, you know, you're ready for the environment, and then suddenly the situation presents that you lose your train of thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I Kodak, I'm sorry I got to cut you off there. First, number one, your phone is breaking up, and number two, the music means it's time to go to a break. But I agree with you. This is the big issue of our time. What kind of America do we want to live in? Kodak, thanks for the call. Always great to hear from you. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Check your weapons at the door. You don't live here anymore. But a heart can never offend when it doesn't know when it spent its lifetime beating itself to death.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. It's been a fascinating day. I think increasingly now people are starting to wake up. It's really remarkable to me, though, how many people who consider themselves Democrats or liberals or progressives don't really get it. I mean, still don't get it. I heard a conversation yesterday on the air, you know, on another radio station about Walmart. And the, quote, liberal, end quote, was saying, well, yeah, you know, it's the conservative was saying, well, Walmart's kind of coming into the community and they're not forcing people to work for them and they're bringing in jobs. And so the liberal guy says, well, they're wiping out the other businesses. And the conservative says, well, you know, but it's competitive. And the liberal, as it were, I want to bring that word back. Taking Jim's advice here, it never got around to it. I mean, people don't remember the basic lessons that Franklin Roosevelt taught us, that government plays a role in the economy because the economy exists on the back of government. You have to have a nation to have an economy. You have to have a government to have a nation. The government sets the rules of business, defines the rules of the game, and businesses have to play it. Before I wrap up that thought, I want to thank our sponsors, in particular, Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, and NewsletterFactory.com. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks, Brad Walrod, for helping select our music, our music editor in New York City, and Louise for producing the program today. It's been a fascinating day. Anyhow, these folks just, you know, and here we have George Bush coming along. The top 1% of Americans, those who earn more than $1 million, are going to get more than $1 trillion back from these tax cuts. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Anyhow, thanks a lot for being with us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll see you then.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public disclosure.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30